Again, I'm very pleased to be with you all this morning on this Sunday. I understand that you have begun for this month to experience and remember and be a part of the experiences of the LGBT community as the Pride Sunday is coming closer, which will be next Sunday. I, as I said earlier, am here as a United Methodist minister. I have been in the ministry for over 20 years. And in the days when I started, it was in the 80s, and I wanted to share with you some of that history so that in the end we could understand the challenge that we have and the belief that we can have in we, the church. There are several bodies in our world that make laws or that bring decisions about. You know, you have the church, the institution called the church. You have the legislators, government, and so forth and so on. When I was moving towards the Board of Ordained Ministry, that was a time when it's been 30 years ago, when the General Conference of the United Methodist Church voted that homosexuality was incompatible with Christian teaching. And it is still in the doctrine of the United Methodist Church today, still part of that. And I was a student at ILEF. And I was one of those members that was moving towards ordination, but also one of those members who was a lesbian, a gay student. And one of my other, we didn't quite know what to do with that. Of course, we were very pained about that. So my friend and I, we decided to do something at our annual, our weekly luncheon, where all the faculty, all the students gather and have a good time. And so I've always loved Willie Nelson. And so Willie Nelson and Julio Iglesias wrote this song or sang this song together. Maybe you know it. It's called To All the Girls We've Loved Before. So I said to my friend Holly, I said, Holly, she was also gay. I said, why don't we get up and sing that song? All the faculty will be there. All the bishop will be there. Our student body will be there. And she said, okay, who do you want to be? And I said, well, I'm short, so I guess I have to be Julio. She was taller, and so she would be Willie. So I don't know if you all are familiar with that, but we got up and we said, we have a special presentation in honor of the General Conference and its vote this past year. So she started with Willie trying to sing through her nose. So she started singing to all the girls I've loved before who traveled in and out my door. And then I came on as Julio and I said, to all the girls I've once caressed. And may I say I've held the best. So, of course, that was our way of dealing with the pain of a decision of an institution into which we were moving to become members. And then the Board of Ordained Ministry struggled with this. You know, as you know, you have someone here who's being ordained, and you don't just be ordained just like that. You have to go through seminary and get your degree, and you also have to do all of these writings and meet with your Board of Ordained Ministries and so forth and so on. And so the students at ILEF, they were all kinds of students, not just United Methodist students. But one of the ways that I saw the church's first response to that was that the student body at ILEF said, okay, so you're going to have to go through the Board of Ordained Ministry. They're going to ask you questions. They're going to ask you these questions about your lifestyle. And it is against church law if you say who you are. Because right now that will make you you will not be ordained. In fact, you could be kicked out of the conference. So the students, there were 300 of us, we all came together and we signed a pact. And it said this, that when we go through the process and we are asked the question, are you a homosexual or are you doing this, that we would all say, in the name of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, an ethicist that we studied for many years, that an unjust law is not a law and an unjust question does not deserve an answer. So none of us will answer that question. Nobody in all those years answered that question. And there was only one year that question got asked because all refused to answer that question. That was a significant movement of what I call the church. Recently, you saw, as we all did, what Ireland did. You know? Ireland became the first country in the world to affirm marriage between all people. And they did it by popular vote. It wasn't their legislature or their government that said, okay, now we have a constitutional amendment, we're going to pass that. It wasn't that way. It was the people. It was the populace. The church. The people outvoted the church. And the church took a backward step because the people in Ireland said, this is the right thing. And it wasn't that those were not Christian people. I interviewed through the internet several Catholic nuns, Catholic bishops, and several lay people who were Catholic. All who said, "Oh no, the church has got to wake up. The church must wake up." And I was very excited about what happened there. Because, you know, in Ireland, there was a very famous person born in Ireland in the 1880s. His name was Oscar Wilde. And Oscar Wilde went to Oxford, moved over to England, went to Oxford. And, you know, during those days, all of Ireland was part of the United Kingdom. But Oscar Wilde, when it was found that he was a gay man, he was sentenced, he was tried and found guilty and sentenced to 2 years in prison. That was in the 1880s. We know of his great works. He was a powerful writer who wrote plays and poems. He never was the same after that. He even wrote a book I don't know if it became a play, but he wrote a book about his life in those 2 years in prison, where he was imprisoned to do very hard labor for the sins of his lifestyle. He died a pauper. He died young. I think it was 45 years of age. A lot of people in those days died young. But a lot of people in those days did not die a shameful death, shamed by the country where they lived and worked and produced. Today we celebrate together because it isn't all doom and gloom. Even though the United Methodist Church still has those same words in their doctrine, many of us have outgrown that. We have gotten more wide than that. It's not that somebody asked me one time, do you think you're breaking the law? And I said, why would I be breaking the law? Well, you know who you are and what you are, and yet you're ordained. How did you get that done? How did you get through all those? I said, nobody ever asked, and so I never had to say. But, you know, it's not all easy to just not be asked. Sometimes, you know, in regular situations, a straight person, I mean, you can say, well, are you married? Do you have children? What does your wife do? What does your husband do? What do your children do? Where have you lived? All these kinds of stuff. When you go through the process, if you're a straight person, you get asked all those questions. If you're not, you're not asked that. That's changing, though. It's changing very, very much. And that is bringing joy into the lives of us. Today, we need to continue to be the church rather than leave the church, as some have done, as many are doing. I know many people in my seminary in class who left. A phenomenal guy named Paul. He was an Episcopal. He wanted to be an Episcopal priest. He was so talented. He was so well versed in scripture. He was a great orator. He was a great preacher. But he could not be ordained, and he even had people in his church go up to him and say, "You know, Paul, I'll make sure you get ordained if you will promise that you will not live with another man. If you just kind of see him on the weekends or something like that, I'll promise that." All those kinds of things. He left. He left the seminary, and he left the church. Somewhere, wherever he is, I think he's a librarian. He studied library science, and he became a librarian, and he takes care of archives. And so that's his role. How many lives is he not touching in the name of God today? There's another man that we're going to sing his hymn at the end of the service today, Reverend Julian Rush. He was the first one of us here in this conference. He was a married man and realized that he was gay. And his wife was also a minister, and they very lovingly separated and told the world, or told the conference, what was going on. They did it very beautifully and so forth. She went on as a minister to get great churches and even became part of the bishop's cabinet. He was almost what we would call defrocked. He was not able to stay in his church. He was not able to be the phenomenal composer of music, and as he is, he had to leave the church, and he started the Colorado AIDS Project years and years ago. Julian, I called him this morning. I said, "Julian, we're going to sing your hymn in church." Julian is almost 80 years old now. Julian was never afraid to tell the church and the community who he was. He did it in the name of God. He always felt that he had been ordained by God, not the Board of Ordained Ministry. He was one of the first to stand up and be courageous, and he has never left the United Methodist Church. Never left the United Methodist Church. You all are a beauty. You have a beautiful church, a beautiful congregation here. You all are the carriers of the message of God, that God shows no partiality. And when I became the director of the Colorado Council of Churches. I was there for 5 years. And then I decided to run for public office. In fact, if you all live in this area, I'm your state senator. But don't call me on that this afternoon. But I sponsored in the Senate the Civil Unions Bill. And I got a call from some people in the bishop's cabinet that said, "You know, you have to be careful because anybody can bring charges against you. So maybe you ought to vote for it, but don't sponsor it." And I said, "So would you go up to Martin Luther King Jr., a black man, and say, 'You know, it'd be better for you not to sponsor the Civil Rights Act of 1964. It'd be better for you to have a white person go talk to the president.'" And so I have in my office at the state capitol my credentials. In those days, you were ordained as a deacon and as an elder. Now you're just ordained as an elder. But I have my credentials up there. Because you know what they do to you if they put you up and charge you? And many people across this country have been charged. They take your credentials away from you. And so what I've said to them is, I have these up on my walls. And I'll be darned if somebody's going to come and take them down. I said, those credentials cost me $60,000 for one thing. So if the tribunal of the United Methodist Church wants to take my credentials away, they'll have to pay me $60,000. And I would love it in a way. I have no fear if someone, anyone, you could, as a United Methodist, any one of you could go to the bishop and file the papers to press charges against me because I am against church principles and against the church law. That happened in New York State, where an 80-year-old professor emeritus of theology, I think he was in Yale, at Yale, married his son and his son's partner. And someone there found out about it, and this man had to go, he was charged, and he was called to this tribunal. And they said, if you promise that you will never marry a same-sex couple again, we will not, we'll drop these charges. And he said, well, I can't promise that. It's not worth it. This was my son. You want me not to marry. I'm a pastor, for God's sakes. You want me not to honor my son's love? These are the kinds of things that still go on today. But the hope is that we are a better church. We are becoming a better church, a wider church. We are becoming a church where we have children who sing in beautiful voices like she does. We have mixtures of people, black, brown, yellow, white, all people. Hopefully our church will continue to grow so that we don't have people from the LGBT community committing suicide. One of the largest number of suicides in Colorado and in the United States are gay men who are not able, who experience bullying, or who are not able to find the right way to be in the world. That's one of the highest suicide rates that we have. I have been at the bedside of a young gay man years ago when Denver Health had a special wing for AIDS patients. He had never been able to tell his parents that he was gay. And when he was dying, that was his desire was, I want to see my parents. I want them to come and see me. His parents came. They thought he had some other illness. They didn't know he had AIDS. And when they found out that he did, they spat on him and said, you are no son of ours. Again, that was some 20 years ago. The hope and the courage that people have taken that has sustained this journey. And it's not just the courage that I have. It's the courage that you all have. It's the courage of the church. Because that is what makes the difference. Because all gay people can't be in every position. We know that this situation that we're experiencing is based on love. Someone came up to me in a restaurant one time when I was at the Colorado Council of Churches. I used to wear a collar. I tried to pretend I was a Catholic priest. I only did that to make the Archbishop a little uneasy. But he came up to me and I think he was the waiter. And he said, can I ask you something? I see that you're a pastor. And he said, I think I'm gay. And, but do you think it's a sin? Do you think I'm a sinner? And I had one of the district superintendents sitting at the table with me. And I said, well, I'm going to just say what I want to say anyway. I said, is your relationship based on love? And he said, yes. I said, is your understanding of yourself based on self-love? He said, yes. And I said, then you must understand that you are never a sinner. And your relationship is never a sin if it is based on love. Because God is love. And as long as it's based on love, you have the honor, you have a foundation that is strong. It has taken people a long, hard journey to get where we are today. And today I will remember in Sunday when we're at the park and some of us are speaking. We will not be speaking just of ourselves, but we will be speaking of the many, many people who are no longer living today, who are not able to be in a congregation like this, who were kept from being in a congregation like this years ago. I'm telling you, 20 years ago, there were not congregations where you could say who you were or who you are. I will be speaking on their behalf. I've always done that. It is not just about me. And I got to admit, too, that one of the things that we were taught in seminary is you don't base your sermon on yourself. But today, I couldn't help it. I really couldn't help it because I think sometimes, we're called in many different directions. I'm called to the ministry. I was called to the ministry years and years ago. I was called to the ministry when I was 9 years old. And I was sleeping outside with the cows. And I was sleeping outside with the cows because my inside of the house was unsafe for many reasons. My mother was an alcoholic. She had a lot of boyfriends. It was unsafe for me. So I would leave the house. And there were these cows out in the field. And they were in a circle. And numbers of nights I would go out there. And they would let me lie down with them. And I'd put my head on their stomachs. And they make the funniest sounds in their stomachs. I would sleep with them. I look up in the stars. And I knew there was a divine presence. I knew that I was safe. I knew that my mother had a lot of needs. I was 8 or 9 years old. I didn't understand it. But I knew I was safe then, and I knew there was a divine spirit in this world. And so I believe I was called then, not by the Board of Ordained Ministry, but I was called by God. Every institution needs its set of laws, I agree. But the church's law needs to be based on the spirit and the history of Jesus Christ, the historical Jesus, the one who went to the well with the sinner, the one who lifted up the poor, the one who fed the poor, the one who went into the prisons and said, let my people go. That is the church of Jesus Christ. And therefore, whether we're straight or gay, that is where we belong. Amen.